This audio is brought to you by MuslimCentral.com.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Wa salatu wa salamu ala ashraf al-mursaleen, Sayyidina Muhammad wa ala alihi wa sahbihi wa man tabi'ahu bi ihsanin ila yawm al-deen. Sisters and brothers, I wanted to put a theme about women who excelled in knowledge, hence the word excel. Of course, I was eager not to put across the wrong message and to say to you that I am promoting for a particular discipline or field of knowledge. It happens that most of the examples are about scholarly women in Sharia and in religion. But I am promoting excel, promoting the values of seeking knowledge, promoting persistence, patience, commitment, discipline in whatever field of knowledge you are engaged in. So these are the lenses that I am using to select my heroes, to introduce you to my guests, to introduce you to the figures that I have chosen in history. Six simple statements. Number one, increase in knowledge is the greatest route to excel and to succeed. I think this is fair enough. Two, women excelled in fields of knowledge that are usually perceived to be the domain of men. Three, women even superseded men in these fields and were masters and teachers in the field. Number four, knowledge is not exclusive to religious sciences, but to all aspects of benefit to society. Here I'm trying to broaden the concept of ilm or knowledge. Number five, you don't have to be excelling in one particular field which this woman or the other excelled in. I'm not promoting these women and what they excelled in. I'm not here promoting hadith or Quran. I'm promoting something else in them, in these women. Therefore, you should learn from their stories and experiences about discipline and patience, which is needed in all fields of inquiry. GCSE, A-levels, university, masters, MPhil, PhD, professorship, medicine, nursery, hadith, Quran, business, banking, whatever. All need itqan, perfection, and mastering, and patience. Number six, the important issue therefore, and this is to me the most important aspect, the important issue is to realize one's potential and then to excel in it. Like Aisha, At-Taymuriya. Aisha did not excel in religion. He's not a sheikha or a faqiha. She excelled in literature. So this is what I'm talking about. Let's then move into women that excelled in fields of knowledge. Let me at the outset, before I talk to you about women who excelled, let me go through how women were perceived by some male scholars. One of the important male scholar is Al-Imam Al-Dhahabi. He's a well-known historian and he's a well-known muhaddith. And he wrote lots of biographies on his scholars during his time and the time before him. He has a book called Mizan Al-I'tidal, which is a book listing all the muhaddithin, all the narrators of hadith, and then between inverted commas, he would say to you, he would then assess this muhaddith to you. He is trustworthy. He is not trustworthy. He is doubtful. Not necessarily liar, but doubtful could mean, or not trustworthy means he forgets a lot. It's a big science of assessing people. Good and bad is not enough. You have to justify why he is good or why he is bad. The book of Mizan Al-I'tidal has thousands of muhaddithin. 4,000 of those who are unreliable are males only. And then Imam Al-Dhahabi comments by saying, I don't know of any woman who was known to be not trustworthy or doubtful or a liar. You should congratulate yourself in that. I don't know then why women lie about their age, but this is something else. So that's good news that we have great muhaddithat. Why would a muhaddith lie at the Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam? Why should a man lie? Well, because he's a man. According to Adhabi, not to me. So 4,000 liars, not a single one, is a woman. I thought I would begin with this good news. There were many scholars that you know of, male scholars, that are proud to tell you who were teachers were, and some of their teachers were women. Someone who is called Ibn Asakir, Al-Hafiz Ibn Asakir. Hafiz is not his name, it's a title. Hafiz is a Hafiz of Quran. Hafiz Ibn Asakir is a well-known scholar called Ibn Asakir, well-known historian, and well-known muhaddith. He had hundreds of teachers. His over 80 teachers were women. 80 of the teachers that he had were women. I stopped for a while and thought and said, I did GCSE, I did A-levels, I did BA, MPhil, MA, and then a PhD. And then I listed all the names of my teachers. James, John, Tim. And then I listed the names of my female teachers. They were 3, 4, 5. Against 20, 30, 40. He had 80 odd teachers. 80 teachers. And you know what is amazing? It's not just the number. What is amazing is that in a patriarchal male society and in a discipline that is a male discipline, he is proud to list a name to you to tell you, these were my teachers. A lot of them were women. He's proud to say this to his wife. He's proud to say this to his colleagues in a coffee shop, in a cafe. He's proud. Wallahi, brothers, I asked the brothers, sisters, please go away. I asked the brothers, would you be proud going and saying to a brother, I'm going to this sister to attend the talk? Or my teacher was so-and-so, you might be proud. But although this is a liberal culture, what about this culture? Of Imam al-Dhahabi saying women never lie. Of Imam Ibn Asakir saying 80-something of my teachers were women. And Ibn Asakir was living in the eastern part of the Middle East. He never traveled to the western part or never had teachers from the western part. Some historians say that the female teachers in the western side were more than the teachers, female that is, in the eastern side. When we say eastern, we mean Iraq, Mecca, Medina, Syria, Damascus. When we say western side, we mean Tunisia, Morocco, Algeria, and Andalus, Spain. So even when you go to the west, not to London, not to Birmingham, no, to the west of the Muslim world, female were even more than 80. I then began to research. I was looking for men, great men. I said, look, to appeal to the audience, you have to mention great men. But look behind the shoulder of this great men and use these great men to introduce women behind their shoulders. So who are the great men that you know? You know someone called Ibn al-Qayyim, don't you? Ibn al-Qayyim al-Jawziyyah. One of his teachers was a woman that was called Fatima bint Jawhar. You know Imam Ibn Taymiyyah, don't you? Well, Imam Ibn Taymiyyah might not have had a female teacher, but he had a female troublemaker in knowledge. Troublemaker between inverted commas, coming and asking him difficult questions. And he thought that this woman was a genius, more genius than a lot of the men. And some historians say that he used to prepare specially for her. And this is something, by the way, I know and appreciate as a teacher. Sometimes I'm going to teach 30 students on a daily basis, but there is this girl or there is this boy. And when she is absent, I am the happiest of the happy. Because I know that when she comes, she's going to ask difficult questions. And she's not going to nod her head as easily as you think. You have to persuade and marshal and mobilize lots of dates and lots of names and lots of, for her to say, okay, I'll think about it. Men or women, I'm talking about people who make you think. And these are the best audiences. These are the best students. I'm not asking you to be argumentative, but just to always question, 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 in a constructive sense. So Fatima bint Abbas was this woman that used to question, used to attend Ibn Taymiyyah's circle, And Ibn Taymiyyah used to be proud of her and used to mention her. And you're aware that Ibn Taymiyyah never got married, but he had a respectable relationship with Fatima. Fatima was not just a, between inverted commas, troublemaker. She had very healthy contact with other women. She used to be a good da'iyah. She used to teach them. So she was a scholar in her own right. Even Imam Zahabi, he says in his book, when he talks about Fatima bint Abbas, Fatima bint Abbas is a well-known scholar, by the way. He says, and I visited her many times. And look, male visit female in a context of respect, in companions, etc. But he says, وَقَدْ زُرْتُهَا وَأَعْجَبْنِي سَمْتُهَا وَخُشُوعَ. And I was impressed and fascinated with her aura, with her khushu'a, with her attitude. Imam Zahabi, by the way, does not sell words for free. He does not, oh, you are nice. You are. Imam Zahabi is a very, very critical muhaddith. And when he says to you, you are a cool guy, that means you are, you better, you are a cool guy. And when he says you are rubbish, you better commit suicide. Meaning that he means what he say, and most probably he is right. So don't ask him for a reference. Unless you are sure that he likes you. So for Imam al-Dhahabi to say, وَقَدْ زُرْتُهَا وَأَعْجَبَنِي سَمْتُهَا وَتَخَشُّعُهَا and her خُشُوع, I think this will add to her CV. Fatima, but she doesn't care anyway, because she was great anyway. But I'm telling you what the male community was saying about her, both Ibn Taymiyyah and Al-Hafidh al-Dhahabi. Al-Sakhawi is another well-known scholar. He had 68 teachers. Imam Suyuti, a very well-known mufassir, muhaddith, and mu'arrikh, he had 33 teachers. It's knowledge that excels you on the top of society, not your sex, gender, ethnicity, origin, or your social background. And therefore, because of that, those male scholars never felt ashamed of saying, my teacher was Fatima. My teacher was a decent human being who happens to have been a woman. Then I said to myself, okay, are you going to talk to us about scholarly women? Well, this is something that has been exhausted now. Lots of tapes, lots of women scholars. I was then beginning to think, no, I should be looking for scholars who have taught men. Again, it's like made men, but now taught men, if you want. If you want another title for this theme, taught men, educated men. Men, be quiet, sit down, relax, and I will teach you. This is exactly what I'm getting at. This was the model that I was looking for. The immediate example is the example of Hafsa ibn Sirin, again, who was the sister, as you now know, of Muhammad ibn Sirin, the great mufassir and interpreter of dreams. She is a great tabi'i, for your information. So she saw companions. She saw Aisha radiallahu anha, and she accompanied Aisha radiallahu anha, and she learned from Aisha radiallahu anha. A male figure, who is well-known figure, who is called Iyas ibn Muawiyah al-Muzani. Iyas al-Muzani, a great spiritual scholar. He says, مَا أَدْرَكْتُ أَحَدًا أُفَضِّلُهُ عَلَى حَفْصَ. It's an amazing quote from a brother. Imagine a brother today says, my best speaker or scholar or role model is Sister Amina. You know Sister Amina, don't you? You don't? Well, it's just a name, I made it up. But why not? Why don't we have Sister Amina in the future? Why always Brother X, Brother Y from the United States, or Brother, I don't know, from Yemen, or Brother? Why? Why? Don't we have eloquent women? Don't we have knowledgeable women? Iyas says, I have never witnessed in my life a human being who is better than Hafsa. At his time, do you know who was living at his time? Muhammad ibn Sirin, her brother, and Al-Hasan al-Basri. Do you know Al-Hasan al-Basri? Okay, I'm not going to dramatize Al-Hasan al-Basri. Books are written on him. Hasan Basri is a fascinating. He's a mujaddid. But I want you to appreciate this statement. So they said to Iyas, what about Al-Hasan al-Basri and Ibn Sirin he repeatedly said it. He said, Wallahi, I still think I've never seen someone greater than Hafsa. Why? Hafsa is amazing. Hafsa learned the Quran at the age of 12. Hafsa, don't try this at home, otherwise the council might throw you away from the house. Hafsa dug her grave in the house. And sometimes she would sleep in that grave. Don't go and burn your carpets and, Father, what are you doing, sister? I've been to this course. He said to me, go and dig your house. But what I'm trying to tell you is that those people, by the way, they live the akhirah even inside their households. Every day she reads half of the Quran, 15 juz. I am aware of brothers who, when they read two verses a day, they think that they are angels flying on this earth. And I am aware of active brothers who tell me that for the last 3 months, I have never opened the Quran. I don't want this. I don't want this. I don't necessarily want you to read half of the Quran every day. I know you have the language, you don't have the time, you are still Bechtel or Yusuf Ali, you don't enjoy it. I know. But I'm making a point. Connect with the Quran. Even if on a tape recorder or a Walkman or whatever. Connect. But as far as she is concerned, she has a graveyard in her house and she reads half of the Quran every day. Do you understand now why he thinks she's better than everyone else on this earth? Whenever you consult for your dreams, Muhammad ibn Sirin, whenever people consult Muhammad ibn Sirin himself, not on dreams but on the Quran, he says, go and ask my sister Hafsa. It's amazing for a man to direct other men to a female member in the family. Go and ask my mother. Go and ask my sister. Go and ask my wife. Who would do that? Another example. I'm introducing to you someone who is a great scholar, and books have been written about him, and I can talk all day about him. And maybe you know him and maybe you don't. He is called Sa'id ibn al-Musayyib. Sa'id ibn al-Musayyib had a very beautiful daughter. So beautiful, so pious. Do you know who proposed to his daughter? Do you know the one who was sitting with Al-Hajjaj, who was the husband of Umm al-Baneen? What was he called? Yazid. He proposed to her. He proposed to her father. And her father, because he thought he's not a fit husband, he owned a lot of money, by the way. But the father still felt he's not a fit husband. I wish all fathers hear this. Anyway, he thought he's not a fit husband. He prays, he has a beard, but he's not fit. So he said no. And of course, Yazid disliked Sa'id because of that. Who did she marry? Once Sa'id went to the circle that he was leading. He had a circle. And one of his faithful students was absent in that circle. So he asked about him. The following day he came. He said, Ya Sheikh, I could not come yesterday. Why? My wife passed away. And he didn't say to him anything. He said, would you take my daughter? Look at these different values. Different values. He rejected a potential caliph, a potential prime minister who will move from, I don't know which street in London, to 10 down the street if he won the election. And he gave her to someone who lived in a council flat who was extremely poor. I'm trying to dramatize the social background. So he said to him, would you be prepared to marry my daughter? He was shocked. He knows. He knows who is she. In fact, I think that he might have thought proposing many years ago, but he was afraid that the teacher would reject. That's his teacher. And this is a moment of agony because of the departure of his wife. And the good news is that, would you like to marry my daughter? And he said, of course. How would I say? At least it means that you will be my father-in-law. And he said, okay. And then he went home, the student, and someone knocked the door. he opened the door and he found Sa'id ibn al-Musayyib, the sheikh, with a covered woman. And Sa'id gently pushed his daughter into the house and he spoke to his student. He said, "I don't want you to spend the night alone." And he wants to consummate the marriage today. He proposed today and he got married in the same day. MashaAllah, it's excellent. I wish I was his student. So the student was shocked. You know what he did? He went on the top of the house and started screaming, "A woman in my house, a woman, I'm not ready for her. I didn't clean the house, fish and chips everywhere. I'm not ready." Until his mother came. She learned that he got married. She said, "Wallahi, don't consummate the marriage. I will take her. I will clean her. I will prepare her for you." And she brought her to him. And she was covered. And the door was shut. And he uncovered her. And she was glowing before his face. This is the first time that he sees his wife. The following day, he began to wear his clothes, the clothes of the ilm, like Malik ibn Anas and turban himself. And she said to him, "Where are you going?" He said, "I am going to your father to learn from your father." She said, "Stay, and I will teach you the knowledge of my father. The entire knowledge of my father, I will teach it to you." What an excellent teacher, mashallah. Imagine your wife, you have popcorn with your wife and you don't need to sit in a circle and stretch your legs and say, "What a boring speaker." It's a beautiful woman who is teaching you and who happens to be your wife. Have you seen an open university that is more interesting and attractive university than this? You don't need to go to university, just stay at home, work from home, study at home. And she actually taught him the entire knowledge of Sa'id ibn Musayyib. Of course, that means what? That means that she herself was a faithful student to her father and that she superseded this student that her father treated as the best student. So for the daughter to teach the best student, that means that she is an A-grade student. I've just got an interesting lady that I would like to introduce to you before we move into himma or aspiration. I was aware and conscious that I'm speaking to people who come from Europe. You're speaking to a European audience. So I wanted to bring an example of European models of women who excelled in knowledge. Of course, historical examples. I found a lot of information on women from Spain, from Andalus. So I spoke a lot during this course about people from Baghdad and from Mecca and from Medina. This is the eastern part of the Muslim world. Now, I would like to introduce to you Andalus or Spain and tell you also that there were great women in Andalus or in Spain. Before I tell you about stories of a couple of ladies, couple of women, let me actually introduce to you Andalus during their time. And I am going to use a statement that was written by a Dutch orientalist called Dozy, D-O-Z-Y, who wrote a book in 1844, quite an old book. And one of the things that he was saying in this book is, this is for you to appreciate the society, the European Muslim society in Andalus during the Muslims' time. He says, "Most of the individuals, men or women, used to know how to read and write at a time where only the elites and priests in Europe could do so." So he's comparing between the layman in Andalus and between people in Europe. He says virtually any Andalusian, any Muslim European, men or women, could read and write at a time where in Europe, Christian Europe that is, writing and reading was confined to the elites and primarily the religious elites or the priests. He says something else. He says, Andalus is the first city in the European world to introduce this institution called public library. In any borough, in any area in London or in the UK, there has to be a GP, a clinic, and a public library. It's unfortunate that this is not the case today in, say, a lot of the Muslim Arab countries. Yes, there is a clinic, but not necessarily a public library. And usually when you go to public libraries, they are closed, or books are dusted, old books, out of date, so as to say to you, please, next time, don't come here. There, he says, the Dutch Orientalist, he says, public libraries in Andalus were everywhere. He says, Andalus by itself, and Andalus was a small city. Look at it in the map. During that time, he says, Andalus alone had 60 public libraries. And Granada, he says, had about 70 public libraries. And then he compares them with the number of public libraries in Europe. And of course, there is no comparison. And this is an Orientalist. He's not a Muslim, or he's not myself. And then he says, Andalus at that time had 30 million Muslims. So it was a proper urban city, 30 million Muslims. So for women to become known in Andalus was not easy. A, we are talking about a very big population, 30 million, and B, we are talking about a very educated population. So while I can tell you that X and Y knows how to write and read in Mecca, this is okay, this is a skill, because there is a few number of population and the society is Bedouin. Here, I'm talking about an urban society, educated society, modern society, and therefore it's not really an achievement to say this woman knows how to read and write. So I cannot mislead you now by introducing to you women and say she can read and write. You will say, stop, come on. According to Dozy, everyone could read and write. So there has to be something unique that women could do. I have two women. One have excelled in everything to do with religious sciences. This woman, I am sorry to say that no one knows her name. I found her in a book that was called Nisa al-Andalus, Women of Andalus. And the book is just about women in Andalus. And it's about names of scholars, names of even singers, names of poets, names of everyone who excelled in that society. It's like who is who in Andalus. You might not agree with everyone and what she did or used to do, but that's it. These were the notables of their time. This daughter of this well-known scholar who is called Fayez al-Qurtubi, or Fayez from Cordoba, she excelled in all sorts of knowledge, science of tafsir, language, lugha, the science of poetry, and she took all that from her father. So it's like the daughter of Sa'id ibn al-Musayyib. She also learned from her husband raqa'iq and fiqh, spiritualism and tasawwuf and fiqh. Sometimes a woman complains, or sister complains, that this is a patriarchal society. You are under the authority of your father. And then the father passes away, you are under the authority of your senior or junior brother. And then you get married, you are under the authority of your husband. The husband passes away, you are under the authority of your son. So we are always oppressed by these males, whoever, whatever the title. Maybe that's true. But maybe, if you consider these as institutions, they will be institutions to you. So you can say, okay, it happens that I am the daughter of this father. What can I learn from this father? It happens that I am the wife of this husband. Now, what can I learn from this husband? And surely, he can teach you something. I'm not here talking about fiqh or hadith. I am talking about this male that sometimes you feel you are not happy. He carries opportunities, he carries potentials that you can benefit from. I'm trying to make you look at things around you from a positive way, rather than you having this habit of perceiving everything to be negative. So this is an example of a woman who learned from her father, who got married and learned from her husband. And then, and this is what is fascinating, this is a mother, she has children, and I know that this is now, you will tell me, problematic, but I don't know how she managed to do it. Maybe she waited until they got married and then she was more freer to walk and go and travel. But this woman actually traveled a lot. I'm talking about a European woman, an Andalusian woman, not a Bedouin from the Middle East. No, she's a European Andalusian coming from a socially respected background. She utilized her position in Andalus and met all the scholars in Andalus. Would you do that? Would you go to London and utilize all the scholars? Oh, you will say, I would not listen from that scholar because he's a man of bid'ah. I will not listen to that scholar because he's a dodgy scholar. Then you will not learn anything. Stay at home and connect to this scholar through the internet and that's it. Ya akhi, go. Or ya ukhti, go and travel and meet him. You might listen to something that is of use to you. So this woman, my point is that she went to all the dodgy scholars and all the decent scholars and all the scholars. And she met them and learned from them. And after utilizing all of them, she went outside Andalus and traveled to Granada. And she went to Dania. Dania is a city in Spain, populated by Muslims. She targeted a scholar that was based in Dania. So she traveled all the way from Andalus to Dania. When she arrived at Dania to meet the scholar, they said to her, "We are sorry, sister. This scholar passed away today." And sisters and brothers, this is a woman who did not come first class British Airways in a couple of hours. This is a woman who traveled months and months on the top of a camel to meet this scholar in Dania. So for her to hear the news that he is dead, but nonetheless, she's after knowledge. What did she do, this positive woman? She attended his janazah, and then she began to ask, who is the inheritor of his knowledge? Who is the carrier of his knowledge? They say to her, his carrier, his inheritor, is a well-known student, faithful student. Do you know what she wanted? She wanted to know ilm al-qira'at, how to read the Quran in different qira'at. There are seven qira'at, warsh and hafs. And so she wants to learn all the qira'at. When she arrived to Dania, he died. The scholar that was the master of the qira'at. She said, who inherited the knowledge? They said to her, his faithful student, Abu Dawood al-Balansi. You know why he's called Balansi? Because he's from Valencia. Valencia is another city in Spain. And these are like, look, European, Dania, Valencia. It's not like Baghdad, Cairo, Mecca, Medina. I'm talking about a European case for you here. So she went to Valencia. She's after knowledge. And then she mastered the seven qira'at. And after that, she thought, enough of the West. I've been to Andalus, I've been to Valencia. Of course, all within Spain. She didn't think about Oxford and Cambridge and Harvard. Because at that time, they didn't have enough public libraries. They didn't have enough people who could read and write. So where would she go? She would go to the eastern side. So she went to Hajj. But from Valencia to Hajj, she went and stopped into Cairo, Baghdad, Homs, Damascus. And you can see the route in the map. This is a route that is being taken by a woman traveler. A woman traveler, excuse me for saying this, who could be attacked and raped, who could be killed by muggers. A woman. A woman who was in the middle of the desert, in the middle of the night. But she is going for that cause. I know that you might tell me that there were male guardians. I don't know. But I am saying that for a woman to be months and months and years outside from her household is something amazing. And she met all the scholars in these cities. And she died in Egypt, and she was buried in Egypt. She has nothing to do with Andalus anymore. This is the story of a fascinating woman. I'm going to end with the story of that other girl. This girl is simple. Her name, I don't know her name. She was a servant. She's in a lesser degree than even an oppressed wife. She's a servant. She can be bought and sold. Abda, Emma, Jaria, if you want. But we know that she was the servant of Al-Hakam. And Al-Hakam was the Khalifa of Al-Andalus, who was different than the Khalifa of the Muslim world. Al-Andalus had their own Khulafa, the Umayyads Khulafa. We know her as the servant of Al-Hakam. So she is unfortunately identified through a male figure. But that's not important for her. What was important, do you know what? She was able to master how to use the astrolabe. Astrolabe is a very ancient astronomical computer for solving problems relating to time and the position of the sun and the stars in the sky. Astrolabes are used to show how the sky looks at a specific place at a given time. This is done by drawing the sky on the face of the astrolabe and marking it so that positions in the sky are easy to find. To use an astrolabe, you adjust the movable components to a specific date and time. Once set, the entire sky, both visible and invisible, is represented on the face of the instrument. The history of the astrolabe begins more than 2,000 years ago. The principles of the astrolabe and goes on and on and on. This woman, for 3 years, she learned how to use the astrolabe, so much so that Al-Hakam was amazed with her ability, skill, and technique to use the astrolabe. And he said to her, your role in this palace is to teach my students, my male, my female, to teach all those who I would like you to teach how to use the astrolabe. This example is fascinating because here I am promoting, marketing to you someone who excelled in other than Sharia, in other than Quran and Hadith. Wallahi, if I had stories of chemistry, of biology, I would not have hesitated. But this is the story that I found of a servant, of a slave girl that mastered astronomy, physics, and the astrolabe. أقول قولي هذا وأستغفر الله لي ولكم فاستغفروه إنه الغفور الرحيم.